Between the Lines.
Between the Lines.
Between the Lines. Local writers, publishers and poets discuss local books and ideas.
Hello and welcome to Between the Lines, a new RTRFM podcast all about books. My name is Danielle Raphael and you may have heard me on Wednesday Breakfast with Taylor talking about a bunch of books, but in this podcast we're going deeper. We're getting stuck into the nitty-gritty with the writers, poets and publishers, bringing local stories and perspectives to life on the page. In episode one, we're chatting with Brooke Blurden. If that name sounds familiar, it probably is. You may remember Brooke from a little TV series called The Bachelorette, where she stole the hearts of men and women alike as the first queer and Indigenous contestant. But as we discover in her debut memoir, Big Love, Reclaiming Myself, My People, My Country, there is so much more to the Brooke Blurden story. Brooke is a proud Noongar Yamaji woman, and her vulnerable yet uplifting story reveals the hardship and heartbreak of a life lived with the legacy of intergenerational trauma, mental illness and poverty. But above all and most importantly, so much love. It was such a pleasure to chat with Brooke for Between the Lines.
Between the Lines.
Between the Lines.
Between the Lines.
Thank you so much for your book, Big Love, in amongst all the madness. You have released a book, which is incredible in and of itself, and it is a remarkable story.
No, thank you for reading it, or if you've had it in front of you. A lot for people to give such good feedback for something that's actually so raw and so, like, it's been so scary along the ride. So, yeah, it's been nice for people, you know, that they've reached out and said thank you or given some feedback. So,
yeah, absolutely. I did have it in front of me, and I had the physical book, and then I bought the audio book as well. So it was listening to you, which is always really lovely, listening to the author reading their book and then reading it too, which was really fun. Let's dive straight into it, hey?
Yeah, cool.
How are you feeling now that the book is actually out in the world, that it's a physical thing, people can read it and listen to it?
I mean, I feel like it's a bit of a dream come true, if I'm being honest. And I think, you know, all the hype is happening around the tour and when you release it. And then over Christmas holiday, it was like, you know, people were reaching out because they got it as a Christmas present or, you know, gifted it to someone. And it sort of just has kept such momentum. And I feel like that's such a great feeling as an author, and like, especially as a young and new author in this space. I feel like when I put it out to the world, I was very scared about what people would think and if they would, you know, actually read it, because considering that I'd been on like so many reality TV shows, I was like, oh, maybe, you know, everyone's got sort of exposure fatigue from me. But feedback has been so lovely, and I think for me, Big Love was just such a journey to write, but it's been also such a nice thing to sort of show people like who the real Brooke Blurden is, and I guess not just based off the shows, and that I, you know, do have a passion for writing, and I do have a passion for sharing my story and encouraging other people to share theirs too. And I think if I can do it, God, anyone can.
Oh, it takes someone special to be able to do what you have, and to have processed everything in your life and put it on page is really remarkable. So it's a testament to you, Brooke, really.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I talk about, you know, some really vulnerable things that I hadn't really spoken about throughout my life. And I think one of them was, you know, having not a lot of access to education and, you know, having to repeat some years of schooling because I was so behind. And for me, like having that physical copy of Big Love in front of me, and, you know, and seeing, such a weird thing, seeing your face on a cover as well of a book that you've put like your heart and soul into. It's just surreal. And I think the 11-year-old girl who used to write short stories and, you know, in the backyard with like just a piece of paper and a blunt pencil, and now having like a physical copy of a book is just crazy. And I think, you know, her dreams have definitely come true. And yeah. I want to encourage other young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to write their stories as well, because there's not that many out there. We've got some bloody creative writers out there, but they're just, yeah, we need to sort of put them to the forefront.
Absolutely. Incredible stories yet to be told. And you mentioned there that, you know, it was significant that you were able to tell your story from your own perspective, on your own terms, because throughout your career, I think it's fair to say that people, and specifically producers, have told mm-hmm. that story on your behalf. And it's, you know, for whatever reason, come across in a light that's not necessarily the truth or your truth. Yeah. How important was it to tell the Brooke Blurden story on your own terms?
I just felt so much power with that. And, you know, that's also why I sort of wrote, you know, Reclaim Your Country, Your Culture on the cover, because I wanted it to be about reclamation. And, you know, a lot of information online was so misconstrued and totally taken out of context. And I was always sort of casted or sort of shown as, like, you know, this trauma child or this problematic person. And I feel like that was not the case. I'm actually so much more than that. And for me, writing Big Love, and obviously the concept of love is kind of ironic, and it's kind of applicable in this situation, you know, being on love reality TV shows. But I think my life is always driven by love in other areas, and I sort of wanted people to know that and show that and have the chance to actually, like, write that and explain that. And I think, yeah, a lot of feedback that I've got from people is like, wow, they didn't realize, like, how much, you know, different experiences that I'd gone through to get me to that stage for when Australia first actually saw me for the first time, you know. And it's like, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. I think that was always something that I lived by, like, religiously. And then, you know, everyone is fighting a battle you know nothing about. So always, you know, have kindness in your heart, be kind. And I sort of wanted people to know that, you know, there is so much more to me than just, like, me that's finding love. I am so passionate about so many different things, you know, within, and why. I wanted to sort of explain why I'm so passionate about those things.
Between the lines.
Between the lines.
Between the lines. What does big love mean? Talk us through it.
Big love. When I came up with, I guess, the name of even the book itself, it just kind of fit, because I always sort of lead with love and always have that within, you know, in my intentions. And it was sort of, for me, I mean, regardless of what happens in life and, you know, experiences that you go through, I've always sort of led with love, and I've always felt like I've never gone unloved, even in some of the, you know, the younger years of my childhood of feeling, you know, neglected and quite isolated and alone. I never thought that I was unloved. And it was about, for me as well, like, learning to even find love in the darkest of places throughout your life. I think knowing that you are loved and knowing that you can also love yourself. You know, there's a lot of talk about self-love and taking care of yourself, but to find love within yourself is actually such a journey and such a, you know, internal thing that you need to do within your life. Because I don't know, I truly believe that if you don't love yourself, you will never be able to love others, you know.
I've been watching a lot of RuPaul recently, so that's I feel like I've been hearing that a lot, and it's enamoring me. I'm like, yes, yes, it's so true.
And I think, you know, it comes with, like, I think the best word to describe it sometimes is finding solitude. You know, when I present to the world, a lot of people from the, you know, from face value assume that I've, you know, had a very privileged life. That's just an assumption. And I think for me, I've just been able to, like, prove people wrong in so many different worlds, but also lead always with kindness and love and realizing the power of it. I think for me, love is so important, and it's so powerful. Like, but it's not just even for myself. Like, it's always been about for my family and my community and the communities that I represent. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It makes so much sense. Like you said, I think a lot of people know you from reality television, specifically The Bachelorette, and as the first Indigenous and bisexual contestant, which is a label that people put on you, and it can be a label that is superficial. But I remember that time and just how remarkable and significant it was for representation. Did it dawn on you how significant it would be for mainstream audiences and for those in First Nations and queer communities to see someone like you up on TV?
Oh, I just remember feeling like it was just my calling, and it was just really important. And obviously I had a lot of doubt of how it would be received. I think anyone would with something that's actually just never been done before. But I just felt like I needed to do it, and I needed to, you know, obviously the concept of the show is to find love, and I was really hopeful that I would end up with that and come out of it, you know, with that. But at the same time, I just have felt like I needed to do this as my purpose, and I think as, you know, someone who's so passionate about showing that representation, because I didn't have it. Yeah, I like needed to do it. I needed to do it for the 10-year-old Brooke who didn't really see herself in mainstream media, and I felt the responsibility and the pressure of that. But at the same time, I felt a lot of pride doing it. Now, it's been a couple of years, obviously, since that show, and we've seen like a huge progression of representation in other areas. But, you know, I can't really speak on behalf of the franchise. I felt like, you know, they've made huge progress, and you know, the following year maybe not so much. But you know, that's not my responsibility. I think I did my responsibility, and I did my job, and I also did, I think, my family and my community. I tried to make them as proud as I could doing something so scary like that, and opening yourself up and being so bloody vulnerable with it. I just can't help but be authentic to my feelings and to who I am. I really struggle with being anything but myself.
The idea of representation comes with a lot of responsibility, and speaking with First Nations folk in Boorloo and even interstate, it's something that comes up a lot, because you are inherently becoming this role model, and with that comes, I can only imagine, a lot of pressure. How do you grapple with that responsibility as someone representing your community?
How do I deal with it? I felt like I've always felt really proud of my culture from a young age, even though, you know, from other people, I was always sort of made to sort of fit into boxes or into labels. And I think I've always been one to push back and define who I am myself and not allow other people to do that. As part of being, I guess, as being a role model, I've always felt really fond of being just someone that young people sort of, you know, aspire to be like. And I've always sort of led by example in most times. I don't always get it right. And I sort of own sometimes that, you know, everyone has their moments. But to the media and everything, I've always tried to be really respectful and really responsible, because that's what I want other young people to do as well. I think being a youth worker really helps with, I guess, carrying out that role model role, because I spend a lot of time hearing from young people and what they want. And I think, you know, I'm able to be sort of responsive to that, which is, you know, very, very thing that I don't take lightly. I think for me, I didn't grow up with a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander role models. So if you can't see it, as how can you see it? I've always just sort of had that in the back of my mind, in my head. Yeah,
totally. How do you take care of yourself, Brooke, in amongst all of that? Because it is a bit of a weight, I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, days definitely do have, some days have more weight to them than most. I've always been very open to constructive feedback to wherever. I always check in with my elders and make sure that, you know, I'm always doing the right thing by them, especially with the NAIDOC team this year as well, which is for our elders. I think that's really important. I mean, I go home and try to, you know, take care of my mental health by being on country and being home, because that makes me, you know, that fills my cup up when I feel like, you know, I'm giving too much energy out. But I think also it's just being grounded and sort of like sticking to your values and what you believe in. You know, if you don't feel like you're being authentic to your values, you're definitely going to feel like you're not doing the right thing, or, you know, you're not going to feel the best doing that. So for me, it's always like, okay, I'm not feeling the most close to my values right now. I'm not doing things that bring me joy. So, okay, what do I do? And so, yeah, it's kind of always kind of reverting back to culture, to country, to my, you know, my grounding, what my parents, you know, my mum and my grandmother, who were matriarchs in my family, who had taught me to always, you know, be your sort of true self. If you're yourself and nothing but, no one can have really anything on you.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah, like if you're not being anything but yourself, then you're not going to have a problem with what people think, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
Between the Lines.
Between the Lines.
Between the Lines.
You mentioned home and you're going to be home on Whadjuk Noongar Boodja very soon. You have strong ties all over the state. You're a Noongar Yamaji woman. Born in Carnarvon, the beautiful northwest of Western Australia. What do you remember of your childhood in the northwest?
I loved living in Carnarvon. I mean, I go there every sort of time that I'm in Perth. My youngest brother was living in Carnarvon until he was at uni. I mean, going back for me, it's like, I guess being at the blowholes and being on the coast is always such a reminder of my childhood and growing up with my mum and my nan, like being in the ocean. And I mean, like the comfortability of like, it's like the comfort of knowing street names and, you know, walking down the street and, you know the majority of the people. So, yeah, I miss that. I definitely do miss that about, you know, the closeness of being in Carnarvon and even in Perth as well, where you, you know, see a lot of the mob. But, yeah, it's different living interstate. You don't kind of get that until you build up. But I've missed home so much. So it's going to be so good to come back for a little bit, even if it's just for a short while.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It's always good coming back home, hey?
Yeah, I mean, the coast is always home to me. And I can't say that Melbourne beaches compared to Perth beaches.
They just don't. No matter what people over east say, WA beach is just best in the world.
Yeah, they hit different.
They so do. You mentioned you grew up so passionate about mental health and you discovered a love of social work. I'm curious, well, I mean, I know because I've read the book. I can't say I'm curious. I know very much the book Blurton story now. But for our listeners, how did you end up here? How did you get into this field?
Well, I think by sort of default in experiencing my own mental health problems, I think for me, I'd always sort of been this very maternal and very like giving and loving and sort of looking after my siblings. And so I'd always had that as like, you know, something I'd been really passionate about and something that had just come really natural to me. And so when I, you know, as you do when you leave school, figuring out, you know, who you are and what you're passionate about. And I think, you know, there's so much pressure for young people to figure out what they're good at and find a career and stick with it. And I hadn't really found that or what I wanted to do. I thought I was going to do something that I was good at and stick to it. But I sort of went on a bit of a journey and sort of fell into working at a youth organisation called Headspace. I think for me, seeing young people at the start of their treatment and then seeing them by the end and, you know, living the best quality of life by the end of their, you know, seeing Headspace, for me that sort of made my heart sort of like warm, and I think for me it made my passion fire up. Like I felt like I needed to do that exact work, and so yeah, I kind of fell into it. But along the time, yeah, sort of worked for different organizations and then, you know, found myself working in TV, which is so far from what I thought I was thinking. But I love it. I mean, I do love working in production and TV because it allows me to reach a lot more people in a shorter capacity in some way. So used to doing groundwork and being in community and doing community work. But on this scale of, you know, what I'm able to do now, it's just far greater. You know, I've been able to publish a book so that, you know, I can reach more people with my story and hopefully, you know, they're inspired to write their own. And I think that's what I sort of was motivated to do, was always show young people, no matter where they come from, no matter their experience, is to live their life by design and not by default. And I think that's something that I'm really passionate about till this day, and I probably always will be. Yeah. And especially just, you know, obviously I'm not even confined to even just Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids. Like I've worked with migrant kids, I've worked with disability. I've sort of been along a spectrum of young people. So I think, you know, message of living by design but not by default is always just a message to everyone as an adult.
Absolutely. It's such an important message for young people, the people that you're working with, I think. I just remember back to those year 12 or, you know, those penultimate years of school and it's like, what am I doing with my life? And I don't think that ever really goes away. You're always kind of wading through this, like, who am I and what is my identity? And, you know, Brooke, through all that you've survived, it would be really easy to lose sight of that. I'm wondering what keeps you going and what gives you strength in all of that?
It's definitely my family and sort of reminding myself sort of where I came from. It's hard as well living away from your family and living from home and sort of, you know, on that hustle, try and make a life for yourself. I think, though, what keeps me going is sort of the legacy that I'd really love to leave with my family, and I really love to help my family break, you know, that intergenerational trauma and cycle that, you know, my family have struggled with. And I have been able to do that, which is really exciting. Like my, you know, all my siblings are doing such great things and doing what they're passionate about and studying or working. And for me, like, I couldn't have dreamt of anything more better for the life that we could have, you know. Like, we all as children really didn't have the best childhood. So for us to be, you know, successful and to be leading by example, it's just, yeah, I think I've left that with them, and like I've been able to leave a legacy, and I've also been able to support them in that. And I think that's what kind of keeps me going, is more my family, you know. And then I think also just like having a commitment to that role, to being a role model that, you know, I guess a lot of young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people look up to me, and I kind of just sort of do my best with continuing that, you know, that leadership. But I do love writing, and I've always loved storytelling.
Mm.
I think listening to other people's stories and meeting people and being, you know, able to do that as like, you know, as a job.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually just like, it's, you couldn't even ask for anything better for me. Like, I feel like that's just what I do. And, you know, being in TV and everything and working in social media definitely has huge benefits of connection and I guess, you know, having some flexibility to do that, which I could only ever dream of doing as well. Like before, when I was younger, always having to sort of live paycheck to paycheck, and now being in a position that I can give back is just bloody overwhelming for me.
Yeah, totally.
Like, yeah, I think my family definitely keep me humble and they keep me going. You know, they also challenge me as well and challenge my thinking, because, you know, I sometimes can get sort of a bit stubborn.
Between the lines.
Between the lines.
Between the lines. One of the most joyful things, there's lots of joyful moments in your book, but one of the big standouts for me is the role that sports played in your life. I'll jump the gun here and say that it's been a huge part of your coming out journey, and obviously that's something that's not necessarily linear, but yeah, talk us through it.
Yeah, I guess life isn't linear, and I think, you know, and when I was playing footy as a, you know, as a kid, I never thought that, you know, I never thought about it being a community. I didn't even know the word community when I was younger. I was like, yeah, just the mob, you know, just hanging out. So when I moved to Perth, I sort of, you know, wanted to just do the thing that I loved and thought about all the time, which was footy. And throughout that experience, I've met some, you know, awesome people and some awesome women. I mean, you know, I think it's very the opposite for men in footy, that, you know, the experiences of coming out aren't always the most, you know, comfortable. And for me, like, obviously that's like the opposite. For me, joining a women's team and being a part of a women's team, I felt more comfortable about my sexuality and who I was as a person. And it actually sort of evolved me and helped me grow. And I think that's what really, you know, sport should be about. It should be in a very, you know, community club. It should be accepted, you know, should be accepting, should be comforting. And all the women that I, you know, were my teammates were also my best friends, and, you know, they would also help out when, you know, when I needed support, which I didn't have a lot of, especially in those, you know, high school years. Like, you know, if I needed to get to training, I was able to, like, you know, really lean into them and get me there. And, you know, they encouraged me and sort of believed in my dreams as well, you know, what I wanted to do, which was, you know, working with kids and, you know, being a role model. So I couldn't, yeah, I feel like I can devote my, like, life and for them to make me feel like I can be whoever I want and sort of come out and be, you know, comfortable with my sexuality, I sort of devote the thanks to them. But sport has definitely helped me in so many different realms of my life, whether that's, you know, in the leadership aspect, whether that's, you know, staying fit to stay on top of my mental health, whether that's being a part of a community, being a part of a team, so you feel, you know, you belong to something or feel accepted. I think all of that is just, you wouldn't think just playing footy that that would happen or that that's what it does. But that's what a lot of people seek in life. Mm. And I think, you know, footy provided that for me. How much more is it doing for other young people too? Yeah. And I miss it so much. I mean, I went for a walk down to the park yesterday and there were some girls playing footy at my local oval. So who knows? I might make a comeback. She did hang up the boots.
Never too late to pull them back down, tie them up, pop them on.
I agree.
Never too late.
COVID 2020, definitely. I was like, all right, it's time. But, you know, she's still nimble. She's still fit and she's still, you know, passionate about it.
I love it. So good. And you're right, it is so important. I think you underestimate the power of community and sport as a community as well. Like you said, you don't necessarily think it is one. You just think it's, you know, a ball being thrown around, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was very fond of footy growing up in my book because it kind of saved my life in so many aspects. Mm. Like, if I didn't have something that, you know, made me consistent and committed and disciplined, I would have never learnt those traits or those skills. For me, like, yeah, it was definitely something that I loved doing at the same time needed.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm wondering, just to finish this off on a light and hopeful note, because I think you do in the book, you have this lovely epilogue where you are writing a letter to your younger self, essentially, and it's just a really beautiful way to tie things all together. So I was wondering, considering all that we've spoken about, what do you hope for the next generation of First Nations leaders and change makers like yourself?
I mean, I'm seeing a huge, huge, huge growth in First Nations representation and trailblazers and change makers. I think a lot of the work and advocacy that I have been able to do over the years has been so inspired by some other creators, but now I'm seeing a lot of the younger generation come through and I feel very comfortable and very fun to sort of step back as well out of those and sort of let, you know, young people take the reins. I mean, I just want their voices to be heard and I think voices to the forefront. And I think we're seeing that a lot in the media and I think we're seeing that a lot with the lead of the Uluru Statement and the Voice, which is really important and something I'm really passionate about doing. So, you know, leading that referendum. And I think also, you know, the conversations around, you know, we've just seen a, you know, huge shift in content creators as well. So, you know, a lot of people are being more exposed and creating really wholesome and really beautiful content around First Nations stories. And I think that's also something that I feel very passionate about too, to sort of push and to see young people taking directive and videography and photography around that. I think, yeah, I think it's just exposure for me just to keep showing up every day and you know, telling a story and being the voice. Or being able
to. Yeah, it's just the showing up in itself is a political move. It's like we're here and we're telling stories that have for so long been omitted purposefully. So, Brooke Blurden, thank you so much for sharing your story and for chatting with me today. It's been wonderful.
No, thank you. I appreciate that, Jenny.
A big thank you to Brooke for sharing her story on Between the Lines. Big Love, Reclaiming Myself, My People, My Country by Brooke Blurden is published by HarperCollins Australia. This is a podcast about stories and was created at RTRFM on Wajak Noongar Boodja. We pay our respects to elders past and present who were and still are the original storytellers. This land was never ceded. I'll be back next month for a chat with the 2022 Fremantle Chieji Hungerford Award winner, Molly Schmidt, to discuss her winning manuscript, Salt River Road. That's going to be published by Fremantle Press in November and I cannot wait. That's next time on Between the Lines.